God Killer Peace and Death is an actual play of Divine Tragedy, made using the game God Killer First Blood by Connie Chang. General content warnings include discussions surrounding death, grief and loss, fantasy violence, imperialism, war, religious themes, and deicide. A full list of cast and crew, as well as other relevant links, can be found in the show notes. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Cradle is a world of myth and legend, a world of gods and champions, a dying world where the aurora in the sky, once known as the river, is growing dimmer by the year, where false alliances maintain a tenuous balance, and a single weight on the scale could topple centuries of peace. But that is of no concern to the people of Brookshire. In this oft-overlooked farming village at the base of the mountain, there is no need to waste time on such tales. People say that Brookshire is a place where dreams go to die. It might be more accurate to say that it is a place where dreams are stillborn, but the result is the same. To be born in Brookshire is to be hated by destiny and scorned by fate. This is a lesson that Chrysanthemum Lullaby has learned all too well. It is a lesson that her daughter, Orchid, has not yet had to face. So tell me, Orchid, do you still have dreams?
I think the only dreams I have are here in Brookshire. I've never really needed to leave. I've never really wanted to leave. All I want is to help, I guess, the people here. And I'm able to do that, so I guess you could say I'm one of the few people whose dreams may come true.
You're a good kid, Orchid. I hope you're right.
I hope so too.
How's your mother doing?
Fine, you know, she's managing, as she always is. Still doing her best to stay as busy as her body will let her be, but she's fine. Yeah, good. She's good, I think.
Good, I'm glad. Will you tell her? No, forget it.
Okay.
Just take care of yourself, okay? And take care of her.
Can do that. Always have.
I know, kiddo. The sun shines through your window. You can hear the morning bird song as you open your eyes to start your day. It's not the first time you've dreamed of that voice, but it's something different about it. It sounds sadder, more resigned.
I think for a second, mulling over the change in this voice. It's familiar in ways that I can't quite understand in this moment. But I do think it makes me go check in on Mom.
You get out of bed. You head into the family room. You can see on your little home shrine, the candle of fasting is still burning, so it'll probably be at least one more day.
Cool. All right. You know, I'm not even that hungry this time around, so, you know, be fine.
Chrysanthemum's door is open. She's not in her room, but you do hear some movement coming from outside. She go to investigate. You see her making her rounds, checking out the garden, not getting into the dirt herself, just leaning on her cane as she looks at your handiwork.
Did a pretty good job this time around, right? I say as I move in to grab her attention, partially just so that she knows that I'm here, but also so that maybe she doesn't take too close of a look at what might otherwise be called a kind of rushed work, as I was kind of being pulled between... I'm sorry, Violetta has started being a menace.
That's fine. The folks at home love a cat.
They love a cat. Violetta, not right now. I was being pulled between a lot of different things. Of course, I had to tend to the garden, but I also had to go down to the village. I promised a couple of people that I would help, you know, on their farms. I promised Tara that I would go down and help her with her garden. I promised a lot of people a lot of things. And so, you know, I maybe didn't spend as much time and care as I probably should have on our garden, but maybe Mom won't hold that against me.
As you do catch her attention, without looking away from the little plot that you have, she says, "It's better, but, you know, the strawberries, they're not, you got to plant them evenly. They need a room to grow. They need room to spread. And you got them all bunched in here. And then, is that mint? Did you plant mint?"
"Was I not supposed to plant mint?"
"Oh, sweetie, you know mint is going to take everything over."
"Sorry. I can just move it somewhere else."
"No, it's fine. I'll repot the mint."
No, Mom, you don't have to do that. I can
repot mint."
I kind of take a look to see, like, kind of any telltale signs of, is this going to be a good day for her or not?
And the fact that she's up and moving already kind of means it's an okay day. It's not as bad as it could be. It does seem like she's pushing against the pain, but mm-hmm. She always is.
"Okay, Mom. Yeah. I mean, it is your garden. I can't tell you what to do or not."
She looks back at you, gives you a once over. "All right. How many people did you tell you were going to do work for today?"
"Well, I feel like I've gotten into a habit of writing on my arm and in like this kind of charcoal, just so you know I remember. I roll up a sleeve and look, just like a couple down in the village," as I'm also like trying to hide it from her so she doesn't see the true amount of names on there, because it's like 6 or 7, I'm sure.
"All right, well, don't overdo it. You know there's no breakfast today."
"Yeah, no, I'm okay. I'm not even hungry. I'm good, you know? I'll be fine. But you should also take it easy. After the mint, you know, it's okay to relax."
This gives you a very, like, gentle pat on the cheek and says, "I'll relax if you relax. How about that?"
"I can't promise you that, 'cause..."
She just gives you a look like, "Well..."
"Well, I mean, but, like, I'm doing things for, like, other people also, and it's like, if I don't go down and help them do that, they'll work themselves to death, and it's like, that's not cool, you know?" "Oh, well, not death."
"You know, those people can make their own choices. I'm worried about you."
"But I'm fine."
"Yeah, all right, fine. Get on then."
"Is there anything I can get you while I'm down there? You know, if you need any other, like, materials, if you need me to stop by a stand to get some more seeds or, like, you know."
"We got everything we need. You already took care of it."
"Okay. I'm just, hey, you know, things change by the day."
"All right. Go on, get."
"All right. Love you."
"Love you too."
And I move in very quickly to give her this very deep hug. I feel like I'm probably taller than her,
like a couple inches taller. Yeah.
And so it's like I'm holding her in a way that feels as if I just want to protect her from, I don't even know what, pain, struggle. Not like I could, not like she would let me, but
you want to make it all go away.
Yeah.
You want it to be easy, because it's your mom and you love her.
Yeah.
But all you can do right now is give her a hug.
Hug her until I can feel her desire to pull away and get to work. And then I do.
While you go and prepare for the day, why don't you tell us what Orchid looks like?
Orchid has a body built for labor. Broad shoulders, rough hands. She's probably standing at like 5'6", 5'7". She has never known a day of rest or quiet. Whether that be because the world hasn't let her have that, or because they just choose not to live in quiet or peace or rest. I think arms are almost always covered in like small bruises, cuts and scrapes from just like working, calloused fingers and joints. Her hair is short. She cuts it almost like almost to the scalp, just because otherwise it might get in the way. Eyes are this violet, almost kind of like an amethyst. Soft eyes, though, like in comparison to the rest of their body that is hard and molded for work. Their eyes are kind and almost kind of sad, as if seeing the world and the people who must live in it makes them sad and pitying just how bad people have it.
It's a hard, hard life in Brookshire.
That's what they say. And that's what it is. Yeah, as I think they are putting on like just... They dress very simply. There's no reason to get fancy. It's all going to get dirty anyway. Probably wash clothes like once a week, if that even.
They probably need to be washed at least once a week, but...
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. And I think it's been a couple of days since wash day, laundry day. So it is... Orchid doesn't dress fancy. Again, there's no reason to. So very simple clothes, nice sturdy boots. Honestly, I think a lot of my clothes come from people in the village giving me like excess clothes or like things that like they've grown out of or things of that nature as payment for clothes that I've ruined while working for them.
Probably growing up, it was a lot of hand-me-downs. I think now that you are like older, stronger, it's more of like a barter trade thing where, you know, while somebody is making clothes for their family, they'll make an extra shirt for you. It's still nice. It's still like stuff that is new, but it is like probably like the least nice of the batch that they were making.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And yeah, once I have my clothes on, I grab my over-the-shoulder satchel, another hand-me-down, and I head on out and go down to Brookshire.
Yeah, as you head out, you briefly see your mom has got like a stool set up in the garden to sit on and has these like little pots that she is putting the mint into as she digs it out. It's probably tempting to stop and help, but you know that you would just get fussed at, so you make your way into town. I think the first stop of the day is to go see Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Tara is the apothecary who takes care of your mom's treatment, who, you know, sends you home with pain medication, and so you have a very good relationship with her. She helped your mom out. You help her out. I don't even know if Orchid notices how Tara treats you so differently than she treats everybody else. She's definitely more patient with Orchid than she is with anybody. But Is that the kind of thing that Orchid pays attention to?
I don't think so. I think Orchid can sometimes get lost in the constant amount of work that they're doing and like the constant amount of asks from other people. The minutiae of those kind of social cues and like things of that nature, like just kind of go right over their head. I genuinely don't think that I recognize the way that people treat me differently than other people, especially Tara. I recognize when people treat me nicely, but I don't think I always recognize how people treat other people in comparison to me.
Do you make your way through town? Everybody's always happy to see you. Everybody's always waving, smiling, greeting you as you pass by. You make your way to Tara's shop. It is one of the larger buildings in town because it's the downstairs shop where she does all of her work, where she makes medicine, where she tends to her little plants, and then her home upstairs where she lives. You head into the shop and you see Tara has like a little plate of meat and bread. She says, "Morning, kid. Your candle out yet?"
"Nah, still probably got another day on that."
"Shame." She takes a big bite of bread and just gestures with her other hand to a little like chair and table off to one side. "Go sit down for a minute. I gotta get something ready for you."
"Yes, ma'am." When I go do just that.
Was it day 5?
7, actually. There's, you know, our Lord has decided that it is, you know, who needs food? I guess Tritus is testing our endurance, our strength, and our faith. And, you know, Mom and I, we've been holding up as best as we can.
She like narrows her eyes at you while she chews, but doesn't say anything, and then sets the bread back down on the plate. Tara is a woman, maybe in her 60s or so. She's got this like platinum white hair pulled back into this like big poof of a braid. Her skin is, you know, weather worn from the amount of time she's spent in the wilderness, but even for her age, she's still relatively fit. She picks up a book and walks over to you. She's flipping through the pages. Goes, "We got a special order coming from a neighbor. I'm gonna need some frost herbs from up in the mountain."
"Okay."
And as she puts the book down in front of you, you see there is like this white flower that apparently grows exclusively under waterfalls.
"Ooh, okay.
And that's not a trip that I can make these days."
"Yeah, no, of course. I can do that. I imagine this is not my first time going up north to the mountains. I'm trying to remember any waterfalls." "Mm-hmm." "And like how to get to them. Making a mental path in my head."
"Yeah, I mean, you know where the waterfall is. You've never had to climb a sheer cliff face to get under the waterfall before."
"Mm-hmm."
"You'll probably need some like special equipment. You might be able to ask around town. It's a farming town, but you know, you have like mountaineering folks around. Somebody might be able to give you some pointers, some advice."
"Mm-hmm." "All right, yeah, I can get that. Anything else?"
"All right, I'm gonna stress, these are very rare, exceedingly rare plants. You need to be very careful when you're picking it, not to overharvest, not to damage the roots, all right?"
"Okay, I got it, Tara."
I'm going to walk you through it again, because I know you're a good kid, you're a smart kid, but you rush sometimes. And it's so, and as Tara is talking, the door opens. You hear the jingle of the bell as one of your friends enters. This is Hayden, who works one of the local farms. You've known Hayden probably since you were like 6.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even younger.
Mm-hmm.
And Hayden comes in with this look of like angry exasperation on their face. Says, Tara, I'm sorry to bug you like this. She waves it off. Listen, my idiot dad was working until he passed out again. And normally I just let him do it, but he hasn't woken up in a couple of days. So I was wondering if you'd come check up on him. Tara gives you a look and looks back at Hayden and says, all right, let me get my bag and then back to you. We'll worry about the herbs later. Just why don't you come with me on this trip?
Yeah, for sure. And I get up and I move towards Hayden really quick and I go, hey, you good?
I'm just pissed off that they keep doing this stupid shit over and over again. Like, there's no reason to work this hard. There's no reason to push yourself this hard to the point of passing out in the sun.
I mean, it is, I understand that. It is kind of what Tritus asks. And so, I mean, I think your worry is well placed, but I also understand why.
Hayden lowers their voice really low and says, well, maybe Tritus can eat a dick.
Hey, okay, well, you know, you can't say that about a god.
I can't get caught saying it about a god.
Okay, that's true, but like, you know what? You're right, you can't get caught. I'm just saying, if Tritus overhears you or someone, you know, else overhears you, not that Tara's going to care, but just watch yourself, all right?
Yeah, well, are you going to snitch on me?
I'm not a snitch. You know I'm not a snitch.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I'm just saying watch.
All right, I'll watch out.
All right, let's go check on your dad.
Tara comes back with her own bag. It's this leather satchel that she keeps at her waist and a basket of just a few different medicinal herbs that she's grabbed just in case. And three of you make your way to the edge of town. The farms here spread out for honestly miles and miles. There are people who technically live in Brookshire who you see like maybe once a season, just because their farms are so far from town.
Mm-hmm.
Hayden's farm is not quite that far out, but it is a little hike. And as you are traveling, you do see just how many people are out working, toiling, harvesting food that none of you are ever going to eat.
I look, you know, again with those sad, almost mournful eyes, but you know, this is life. What else are we gonna do?
Hey everybody, it's me, Kendrick or Kendo, whichever you prefer, the creator and host of Tales Yet Told. Thank you all so much for taking your time to listen to our brand new series. Both the team and myself are incredibly grateful for your support. Starting a new series is never easy, especially coming off the heels of one as ambitious as Our Lives in the Woods was. So I am thankful that you took your time to give our show a chance. But I'm also incredibly happy to have Godkiller Peace and Death here on the channel, and proud to be able to help give it a second life with the remaster. With that said, I just have a bit of housekeeping I have to do before we get back to the show, and I also have a trailer for another show that I think you're going to love. First off, if you don't already, consider following us on social media at Tales Yet Told on places that matter, like Instagram and Threads at the moment, and at talesyettold.com on Blue Sky, and you can also check out our website at, well, talesyettold.com. If you want to keep up with everything going on the channel and see all the amazing projects we've been working on, those are the places you'll find them. And if you're looking to freshen up your wardrobe, as well as supporting an independent artist, you can grab some of our merch at merchyetsold.shop. And if it helps get you in the door, I'll sweeten the deal. Get 10% off of your order if you use promo code ORCID when you check out. Lastly, we'd appreciate it if you would help spread the word about our show. Word of mouth has always been, and always will be, the best form of marketing. So if you want to help our show grow, please tell a friend about us. Just one. That's literally all I'm asking. If each person listening to this episode convinced one other person to take a gamble on a queer horror actual play podcast, we'd double our listener size. Wouldn't that be awesome? So tell a friend, post about the show on social media, tell all of your Tumblr followers, whatever you can do. It would mean so much to us and to me personally. So thank you in advance. And if you don't, no harm done. I still appreciate you for listening anyways. All right, I am done self-promoing. It's time for a quick ad break and then back to the show. See ya. Sound is an amazing thing, don't you think? It can guide the listener in subtle ways, drawing them into the story it tells, changing the mood, evoking an emotion, foreshadowing doom. There's a reason why we spend so much time here on Tales Yet Told, designing the soundscape of our story. But now you can do the same with Pocket Bard. Pocket Bard is a free audio app that helps game masters weave immersive sound into their games, with ready-to-use scenes, ambiances, and sound effects that you can transition through seamlessly with the touch of a button. And starting on June 27th, Pocket Bard is moving from your pocket to your PC with a new desktop app for Windows and Mac. Download Pocket Bard today and bring the power of immersive sound to your table. It's the same color or jacket and... Oh, hey! Didn't hear you come in. I was just designing one of my characters in Hero Forge. What's Hero Forge, you ask? Hero Forge is an online character creator that gives you the power to turn your imagination into reality. Hero Forge offers full customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, like hairstyles, clothing options, and equipment. And after you're done designing your hero, you can have them made in a variety of materials, including bronze, color plastic, or even a color standee if that's your vibe. Then get it sent straight to your door, all from within your browser. But if you're a DIY kind of person, then Hero Forge also offers downloadable model files so that you can 3D print your design at home. Just head on over to heroforge.com to start designing your custom miniature today. And check back often, because new content is added every week. Now, can you get out of here? I gotta finish making this Eagle Man. This episode of Tales Yet Told is brought to you by the folks over at MythWorks with their newest Kickstarter, The Wild Sea Sourdough. In The Wild Sea, you will set sail upon the Verdant Sea, an ocean of forest canopies full of lost world artifacts, treacherous pirates, and world-bending whispers. But the pale tides of the Sourdough are far harsher than the eaves you may be used to. This brand new supplement for the award-winning TTRPG introduces you to the White Woods of the Sourdough, the ancestral home of the sentient hive-minded spider colonies known as the Trellicrae. The Wild Sea Sourdough features 3 new factions, 4 new background options, and new ship options to prepare you for an adventure you may just barely survive. The Kickstarter is live as we speak, so go back now before it's too late. And I'll see you on the Wild Sea.
It is the year 3014. 50 years since the magnate Charlie Manjay disposed of me on this wretched asteroid. In that time, I have served as this prison's eyes and its ears, biding my time while I assembled the means of my escape. The inventor.
I promise, if you do this, I'll be a thorn in your sides.
The cook.
When they come to pick us up, I want them to be afraid.
The clone.
Ready is my only mode of operation.
The gun.
This isn't goodbye, motherfucker. This is see you later.
each betrayed by the Magnate. Together, his undoing.
Death of the Magnate, the inaugural season of our sci-fi anthology actual play, Genre Space, premieres June 7th, 2026. Come listen wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I'm here to tell you about Dice Exploder, a podcast where each week me and a rotating co-host take one tabletop RPG mechanic, just one mechanic, and break it down as deep as we possibly can. If you love thinking about role-playing games and how they work, this is the show for you. Come listen to me talk to Alex Roberts about love and pity, John Harper about elegance and layout, and Mikey Ham about, what else? Exploding dice! It's an interview show, a review show, a design show, and most of all, a show for anyone who loves these games. Come on down and join us. Find Dice Exploder at DiceExploder.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
And as you arrive at the family farm, Hayden leads you all into the house and says, "My dad's in the bed through there." Hayden's mother is weary, famished looking woman, sits at the kitchen table with this just look of abject terror on her face that you don't think you've ever seen before.
My immediate reaction to seeing someone in such distress is to go to them and attempt to comfort. I move towards her, go, "Hey, ma'am, are you..." I guess, is she looking at something specifically? Can I see what she's looking at?
She was just, like, watching her hands. Like, she's just, like, staring at her hands, like, clasped in front of her. Uh-huh. And as you come over and lean down, she turns and stares at you with, like, these wide, vacant eyes. She's acknowledging that someone in this direction has spoken to her, but, like, she doesn't see you.
This is Hayden's mom, right? So I would know her name.
I just call her Mrs. Turner.
Okay, Mrs. Turner, perfect. "Hey, Mrs. Turner, you good?" Like, I, like, immediately, like, try to bring myself down, like, to her level, like, on my knees and, like, slowly moving to, like, attempt to, like, put, like, a comforting hand, like, on a shoulder or, like, knee as I'm like, "Hey, are you, what's wrong? Hey, we're here.
It's like my grandpa. I haven't seen it since my grandpa, but it's the same. It's just the same."
What are you... Hey, okay. Okay, what? What is the same?
And she just keeps repeating it over and over again, like she's in shock. And then you hear Tara from the other room say, "Orchid, get in here."
Okay. And I try to look over Mrs. Turner again before I get up, and can I try to feel her out here?
Yeah, let's do it. So when you feel someone out, you will answer one question and I will answer the other question. So say what you want clarity about and choose one of the two questions to answer.
Okay. I mean, the thing that I want clarity about is, like, she's obviously in a great deal of distress and a kind of terror that I've never seen before. Like, what is there to be? What is there to be terrified of? And I guess I might get an answer to what specifically that is if I go to where Tara is. So I guess I think the thing that I want clarity about here is, well... Sorry, I'm trying to think of a thing that isn't just going to be answered if I go into the next room, you know?
I mean, it can be that thing.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Then yeah, I guess I want clarity over what is it that has caused such terror in Mrs. Turner here. And I will answer, what feels dark or unnerving when I peer deeper? I think the thing that feels dark or unnerving is kind of like this unfamiliarity of, like, true terror. I have always lived in a world where truly the worst thing that can happen to a person is, like, maybe you work yourself so hard that like you pass out for a couple of days. You need like a week or so to recover. Or like the candle just isn't going out. Like the candle's been going for like 2 or 3 weeks and you're just like, God, I'm so hungry. Tritus, I'm so hungry. Please let me eat. But that doesn't really give terror as much as it gives just like frustration. And so I think seeing Mrs. Turner like this, like what's so unnerving is like, this is, I don't think I've ever seen someone truly afraid of anything, truly terrified of anything. And that, and seeing that for the first time is terrifying.
Yeah. It is terrifying. And she is truly, truly, utterly afraid. I think what feels familiar is that I think you have seen shock before. Because shock is a specific, like, autonomous reaction. Like, you've seen a horse break its leg, and you've seen the way that its body freezes and like it doesn't know what to do. Like, you've seen like injuries from farming accidents or from falling out of a tree even, and you know that when the body is too injured to deal with the pain, it goes into shock. That is the body's way of protecting itself from a thing that it can't handle. And I think perhaps subconsciously you recognize that this is shock, but there is no physical pain. Like, she is not injured, she is not hurt, she is not, nothing has happened to her. This is an emotional shock, a psychological pain that she is trying to cope with by shutting down. And it is something that is, it seems like something that she is familiar with, something that she knows is true, but has not experienced in a long time since her grandfather, which probably not anybody you've ever met, no one you know anything about, but I mean, her grandfather is not alive. Her grandfather was from the time before death was suspended. So whatever she's afraid of, it's something that this world has not known for a long time.
I again reluctantly move away from her and over to where Tara has called me to.
When you step into the bedroom, Tara very curtly just says, shut the door.
I do so.
I want you to come over here.
What's wrong? Mrs. Turner, she's real shaken. And I think that's when I see.
Yeah, you see Hayden's father. This man who has always been so bright and vibrant and full of laughter. This man who, you know, used to pick you up and carry you on his shoulder. This man who's like an uncle, who's like, you know, you see this man who you've known your entire life laying still and stiff, his skin pale. And you see Tara, not in shock the way that Mrs. Turner was, but you see her hands gripped into fists. You see she is standing almost unmoving as she says, I want you to put your hand over his chest and tell me what you feel.
Okay. My hand slowly moves over him in a way that I don't think Orchid has ever really moved. Slowly, anxiously, as my hand lowers to his unbeating chest.
Like you said, there is no heartbeat. His skin is cold. There's no raising of breath in his lungs. There's nothing.
I don't understand. There's nothing.
Tara collapses into a chair, looking like you've just said the last thing in the world that she wanted to hear, but you've confirmed something that she already knew.
Tara, what's going on? Is he... What's... this... What's going on?
Orchid, that man is dead.
What? Wait, I mean, that...
I know it's gonna sound strange to you. You haven't seen anybody die your whole life, have you? What are you, 20, 26?
Yeah, wait, I thought no one... How do they die? You can't die. I just...
Orchid, we don't know why people stopped dying, so you don't expect me to tell you why it's starting again, do you?
Wait, no, I mean, just like he was here yesterday. Like, he was working just fine. All he did was just work. We do that all the time.
Orchid, I don't know how to explain this to you in a way that'll make sense, but you remember when you were about 9 years old and you thought to help patch that roof? You fell down and you cracked your head open.
I mean, yeah, I still got the scar from that.
That's the kind of thing that used to kill people.
I mean, yeah, but it doesn't anymore.
Yeah, and working the way he works, that's the kind of thing that used to kill people.
Right, again, but it doesn't anymore, so why...
But it did. I don't know why, and I don't know how, but it did.
Okay, so, I mean, is there something, like, how do... I still have my hand on his chest, kind of unconsciously still there. I mean, but all he did was work.
It's only so much a body can handle. Folks been pushing themselves past what they can handle for a long time here.
Yeah, but Tara, people don't die. That's not like that. Why? What is Mrs. Turner gonna do? What is Hayden gonna do? Why him?
I don't have the answers to those questions, but I suppose we'll do what we used to do. We'll have a funeral. Tara stands up and crosses the room and opens the door. She walks over to the kitchen table, sits across from Mrs. Turner, reaches out a hand, puts her hand over this new widow's, and before Tara even has a chance to say the words, Mrs. Turner has that same look that something she knew was true and didn't want to be true has just been confirmed. She starts sobbing. Hayden rushes into the room, sees you standing over their father. Says, what? What is it?
I'm sorry, Hayden.
What do you mean you're sorry? All this medicine, all these herbs, what do you mean you're sorry?
I don't know. I think the only thing I can even think to do, the only thing I even know to do, is to hug them.
You hug them, and for a moment they are just stiff in your arms, and then they wrap their arms around your shoulders, strong and hard from a life of labor. And they squeeze you so you can feel tears dripping from their eyes to your cheeks. Still confused, still frustrated, still angry. You know Hayden has questions that you can't answer, but they're not asking them.
Yeah. I just stay here with my... I think with their shock... I don't know. I'm less composed than they are. I'm like, I have my head buried in the crook of their neck, and tears are beginning to fall as I don't know how to say the words to my friend that their dad is dead. And I don't think even if I could say those words that neither of us would really know what that means.
Why would you know? You've never had to do this before. No one who you have ever met has ever died. But eventually, Hayden does let you go, and they go back over to their mother, hug her tightly. They go back outside to tell their siblings whatever they can tell them. I don't think there's any news that will make sense to them any more than it makes sense to you. But gradually, over time, each of them files back into the house until the room is crowded with panic, sadness, confusion, anger. Do you stay?
Of course. I mean, I think I do for a while, for a long time. Not in the room, obviously. I make room for, you know, family and friends to see the body. But I stay for a while because I, in case Hayden or Mrs. Turner need me, I guess. But then I realize that there are other people who might also need me, especially if now the consequences of me not being there might mean that Hayden is not the only person who loses someone today. So I find a time where I can be scarce and I quickly start making rounds through the town. People who asked for my help, people who were already in states of like recovery from previous, you know, work incidents and stuff. And I don't know, I want to make sure this doesn't happen to anyone else.
As you excuse yourself to go help, as you always help, the news of his death spreads faster than you can travel. And at each home you arrive, you see people have put down their tools, set down their work to gather and whisper, "Have you heard about Jareth? Have you heard about Mr. Turner? Have you heard? Have you heard?" And as this gossip ripples through your little town, people your age, people younger, are confused. They are trying to wrap their mind around the concept of someone who was here, no longer being here. While people who are older, their parents, their grandparents, aunts, uncles, they are confused and also frightened. They are frightened of what they remember, frightened of what they don't know, frightened of what it could mean for them to die. This old, forgotten fear resurfacing, gripping this little farming town where no one's dreams ever come true. One after another, after another. "Have you heard about Jareth? Have you heard about the Turners? Have you heard that a man died?" Until finally, sun sets, and even what little chores you try to do will have to wait till another day. As everyone returns home, returns to their families. As you return home, you see the front door is open.
I freeze for a moment. I think in my panic to help everyone else in town, I think I had forgotten about home and about my mom, and I think the same terror grips me as I run inside, calling out for my mom.
You run inside. I think the first thing you notice is the darkness of the home. It doesn't look like anybody has taken the time to turn on any lights. You notice that the fasting candle has burned itself out. You look around and you smell. It smells like burning, like food that's been left to sit for too long. You rush to the kitchen and you see your mother is collapsed, breathing. She's breathing, but it's heavy and ragged with sweat pouring down her face.
Mom, I rush to her, immediately drop to a knee to get down to her and try to see if I can help, try to support her, maybe try to, you know, pick her up. Mom, are you okay? What's wrong?
Her eyes closed. She stirs a little at the sound of your voice as you pull her into your arms. She goes, I'm okay, baby. I'm okay. I'm fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah, just help me to bed. I'm fine.
Yeah, of course. And I pick her up and carry her to bed.
I wanted to have dinner waiting for you. It's been too long since you ate.
Oh, it's okay, Mom. I'm not even hungry. I'm good. You okay?
I felt, for a second, I thought it was her, but it wasn't her. It was somebody else.
What? Who are you talking about, Mom?
For a second, I thought your mother came home, but it was somebody else.
Who was it?
Before she can answer, she fades from consciousness and falls asleep.
I think there is a moment of deep terror and fear as she falls unconscious, and there's like a good minute or so where I stand there just like watching over her, putting my hand like on like her head and her chest, making sure she is still breathing.
She's breathing. Her heart is beating. She's warm, feverish.
I go to the kitchen. I make sure to take, you know, the stuff off the stove, or make sure, you know, nothing stays burning. If there's any like bread or anything like that, something that I don't need to cook, I'll, you know, grab that and, you know, on a little saucer, and I'll move back to her room. I'll lay it next to her. I'll also get like a cloth. I'll wet it to put it on her forehead, maybe to help, you know, bring down the fever. And I grab a chair and I sit there and I watch over her to make sure she stays breathing.
You sit and you watch and you wait. I think I want to ask, does Orchid pray?
Probably not.
To anyone?
Maybe. I think it's been a long time since they have. She is used to taking care of things herself. But this isn't really a thing she can do with her own hands, you know? And so I think maybe, for the first time in forever, she does. Not necessarily to anyone specific. I don't even think she would know who to ask. But as I sit there, hands clasped, head down, just whispers under my breath, I don't know if anyone can hear me. If anyone cares, but please, I can't lose her. I can't lose my mom. I I don't understand what is happening or why. I want answers. I need answers. If there's anything I can do, please, please let me know. I want to help my mom.
All right. You can answer one of the following questions. You can say what kind of God answers your prayers, or you can say what unclear omens or visions besiege you.
What God answers my prayers of how can I help my mom? I mean, I think it might be Archaea, the God of insight and revelation. Like, I feel like that is the thing that I'm praying for, to understand what is happening, to understand if there's anything I can do.
Archaea typically grants their blessings to prophets, oracles, sages. Archaea rarely bothers with farmers, with laborers, people who are so busy toiling, they don't have time to think of the greater meaning of the universe. But as you pray for guidance, you see something. You see a vision. You see an hourglass turning. You see the sands draining slowly. You see, as you focus in each grain of sand, each of the countless billions grains of sand is a life. And you see Jareth Turner. You see his grain of sand fall from one side of the hourglass to the other. And you see faces of countless, countless people who you don't know. You don't recognize. And as you follow the sands to the top, you see resting in bed is your mother, the last, the very last who will ever die. But the glass of the hourglass is cracking. It is being assaulted, being besieged, you know. For now, your mother will live, but that is only as long as the glass holds.